New Thinking Aloud is presented by the California Institute for Human Science, Mind, Body, Spirit University, a leader in fully accredited in-person and online U.S. college degree programs in many of the topics we cover here. Visit their website at cihs.edu.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. Today we will be exploring and experiencing exercises for awakening. My guest is Suzanne Giesemann, who was named by Watkins Mind Body Spirit magazine in 2022 as one of the 100 most spiritually influential living people. She is a former U.S. Navy commander who served as a commanding officer and aide to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. She is also a spirit medium and is the author of 17 books on spiritual topics. Her newest book is The Awakened Way, Making the Shift to a Divinely Guided Life. I would encourage you, if you haven't watched our previous interview on living the awakened life, to check it out now. You should be able to link to it on the upper right-hand corner of your screen if you have the a proper computer to do that. Suzanne is in Idaho for the summer, and now I will switch over to the internet video. Welcome, Suzanne. It's a pleasure to be with you once again.
Thank you, Jeffrey. So great to be back. Thanks for having me second time.
I have encouraged our viewers who are going to be going through some of these exercises with us today to watch the previous interview, because I think it's an important introduction. But we can say that you have divided the exercises into six different categories, and I hope that we'll be able to touch on each of those categories as we move forward. And the first one is really basic, getting to know your true nature. And the first exercise that you have there is called Questioning What Is.
Yeah, exactly. So few people take the time to really question what we've come to believe, our BS, as we talked about, our belief system, which is mostly learned. Our parents and our teachers teach us this is the way life is, and then we have our own experiences. But it was mind-blowing to me when I started asking questions like, am I more than human? As basic as that. Does the sun really set? No, it doesn't. It only appears to. So what else might not be as it appears?
And to begin that exercise, you have some
centering practice, perhaps?
Yeah.
It's important that we don't just ask a question like we do most things. Like, I wonder if I'm more than human. This is a practice of actually connecting with the field where all the answers are going to arise. So we just get centered first. We take a deep breath. We make sure we have a clear intention. And then we move our awareness to the heart so that we're accessing more of the direct knowing instead of going back to the standard patterns of thinking in the left hemisphere of the brain, and then we ask the question from that state.
In other words, getting to know your own true nature isn't about doing more thinking. It's about entering a different state of awareness completely.
That's true. And then you actually have the experience of your true nature instead of just thinking about it again.
I'm reminded of a famous exercise I believe the Indian sage Ramana Maharshi recommends for people, simply to ask over and over again, who am I?
Who am I? I love that. I didn't know that was one of his exercises, but once when I was channeling my guides for a class, they asked, are there any more questions? Because my guides always take questions when I channel. And there was a long silence. My eyes were closed. I was not interacting as Suzanne with the class. And after this long silence, the guides came back in and said, well, if you have no questions, the greatest question you can ask at any time is, who am I? And I like to ask that question frequently because it will change as we grow and evolve in our understanding of who we are.
I have a joke about that question, who am I? A spiritual seeker climbs up to a mountaintop and wants to know the answer to this question. And he looks up at the heavens and he shouts to the heavens, who am I? And at that moment, the clouds start rolling, and there is a bolt of lightning, and a big booming voice comes out of the cloud and says, who wants to know?
Okay, good, 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 good.
Well, one of the other exercises that you have in this category of getting to know your true nature is setting the story aside, learning how to let go of some of the old ideas that we've been attached to.
Yes, that is so helpful in coming to start reframing ourselves as souls playing roles. And the role is the story. The story goes with the role. They're totally interconnected. In fact, I get daily messages from my guides, and this morning's was all about a new practice to see each other in our roles as souls. So learning to shift from seeing yourself as a story to knowing yourself as a soul is the whole point of the Awakened Way.
To shift from seeing yourself as a story, because normally that's what human life is a story from birth to death.
Of course. And how else are we going to have an experience? If you are source and you say, I'm going to go out and play, and first I'm going to need some playmates, right, so that I can really have some fun here. You have to have a beginning, a middle, an end, ups and downs, and all the things that make for a great story. So that's what we are doing. We are living out stories as source.
And it's so easy to get attached to that story, to think that that's who we are.
Way too easy. Yeah, we could spend a whole hour talking about examples of people who've gotten attached. And so these practices, some of them that we'll talk about later, really help us remain aware of when we're in the story and when it's taking over, because it can really cause misery.
I am under the impression that it is possible to let go of the story just like that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And people that don't know that will suffer. That's what the joy of all of these exercises is that this, they provide a relief valve, a way out to peace. And yet we can still honor the story with all of its ups and downs. Mm.
It reminds me, back in the 1970s, there was a very popular training program called EST, Earhart Seminar Trainings, and they used to talk about practicing the technology of getting off of it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm only familiar with the title. I don't know the work. I've heard about it a lot, but I don't know that there's anything new in anything any of us are teaching, but if we have new ways of looking at the old and it's helpful, bring it on.
Well, I thought it was a cute phrase I used. It stuck in my mind, the technology of getting off of it. Actually, it's not a technology. You just do it. But
yeah, it takes awareness and the awareness that we can do it.
Another exercise that you've put into this category of getting to know your true nature, you call ocean breathing. Let's go into that.
Oh, it's the most beautiful exercise for remaining present and for finding peace. And if everybody were just to momentarily look around you and notice how we normally see things. My eyes are landing on objects in my room, and then I look out the window and I see leaves, and we are categorizing things and stopping and pausing and thinking about them without even knowing it. It's a very active practice, But with ocean breathing, we become like the infinity symbol. We exhale and become one with everything in our awareness. And as we inhale, we bring what we have perceived and experienced back into ourselves, and we flow as one, like one ocean, but all the waves of what we're experiencing merge into each other. So even as I say that practice, you can feel the shift in energy, and it shows you that there's a different way of perceiving and a different way of being. So not only does it bring you peace, but it increases your awareness that we really are interconnected with everything and everyone.
Well, it almost feels like we could stop right there.
But that's the beauty of these exercises, six different sections, categories, but all of them flow into each other. I have them in a bit of order so that they build upon each other, but you could just open the book randomly and pick one, and they're all going to do lead to the same place, that shift.
We should make a point of letting our viewers and listeners know that these exercises, you intend them really as more of a way of life than some set of exercises that you go through and then move on.
Definitely, and they've become my way of life. And you can ask your helpers in spirit, even if you haven't met them yet, the book will help you to meet them, to put an exercise in my mind anytime that might be helpful. So you could just be out for a walk, not thinking about spiritual things, and suddenly have an inspiration to practice ocean breathing while you're walking. And you know, maybe you think you had that idea, but it also might have been put there by a helper who said, "You asked, here you go."
Well, your second category of practices is called maintaining daily energetic hygiene. And that opens up a whole realm of like the body's energies. And you refer, for example, to chakras.
Well, we are energetic beings. We are, you know, you could call it the soul. That's the spiritual term. But the scientific term would be fields of energy that are flowing with other fields. And the reason I call it energetic hygiene is because if we use day-to-day mundane terms, our energy gets a little gunked up just by interacting with other fields. We have our own resonant energy, but then we interact with others who have different frequencies, and the energy slows down. It can become constricted, or it can become a little bit too much. So I use the word hygiene because we can clear it out, clean it up. And it's daily energetic hygiene because I love asking my classes when I teach in person. This is a very personal question, but how many of you shower regularly? And people are always hesitant to raise their hand, so maybe 50% will raise their hand. And I say, "Really? That's all?" And then they laugh. But we do. We clean our physical body regularly, but it doesn't occur to people that our energy field can be just a mess. If you do some little practice daily, like you wash your body or brush your teeth a couple times a day, if you do something to get the energy flowing beautifully, you cannot help but notice a difference.
It strikes me that this is especially important because we live in a culture in which we're surrounded by a lot of negativity.
Absolutely. And we just don't realize how it affects us until we clear the energy and feel the difference. I had a physicist email me and said, "I heard about this chakra," when you mentioned the chakras, these seven alleged seven energy centers in you, "and I can't find any proof that they exist." And I said, "Sir, you may not find any physical proof, but do my practice that I call the 10-minute transformation of clearing the chakras. Do it when you're not feeling your best, when you feel a little off balance, and see if you feel a difference. That's all the proof you need." That's the point. Is it helpful in healing?
How does one clear a chakra?
With intention, because we can't necessarily see them. Some people claim to be able to see the colors of each energetic center. But with the open-minded attitude that perhaps there is something to this, that there may be these energetic centers, or myself as a whole as one energetic being, I'm going to set the intention that how I'm feeling now is not the best I could be. I'm going to use whatever practice works to clear them, to bring them into balance. And then you go through each one in accordance with the exercises that I have in the book and see if you feel a difference. I do this regularly, especially before I do my work with other people. And it's necessary.
Another exercise you have in this category is called clearing physical spaces.
I just realized I did a session about an hour ago and I had to cancel it because the energy was, we just couldn't make a connection with this woman's loved ones. And you just gave me a start because I realized it's been about a week since I've cleared the energy in this room. Now, I don't feel that that was the reason for today's lack of connection, but it reminds me I need to do that. I never knew that energies and spaces, houses, rooms, can get as gunked up as we can energetically in the vernacular there. But I've had physical feedback, experience of the before and after I clear a room where I work, how much better it is. And you do that with intention as well. I give specific practices in the book, but it really all comes down to creating with consciousness.
I know one of the practices you discuss in your book is, and it's relatively common in various circles that I'm aware of, people use sage. They burn sage as sort of an incense, and it is said to clear negative energy.
That is true, and I tried to be very careful with the wording that I used in the book because one of my assistants told me that a lot of Native Americans become insulted when we appropriate their practices that are very sacred and very specific. And so we're not trying to do that. We're using a tool, sage, that has worked for many cultures for eons to cleanse energy, and it really does work. So we do it with a sacred intention and see what difference it makes.
When it comes to energetic hygiene, for myself, I tend to think of it more in terms of thoughts that I have. Like I might have a negative thought, like I make a mistake and I might say to myself, oh, damn, I'm stupid, something like that. And you, yeah.
Clear that out. That just sent this burst of energy at me that I felt. And I just did this quick. That's an energetic hygiene practice. Clear that out.
With your hand.
Yeah. I took the swirl of, I'm just pulling that little, that thought pattern of itself right there that you just sent this way as an example. I felt it. And so I just acknowledge it. I'm not going to let it lodge in me. And I pull it out and send it away. That was an absolute program pattern in me that I couldn't help but do that when I felt what just happened there.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
I really like that. And I think that we all tend to, from time to time, say negative things about ourselves to ourselves. And I think those are the most important thoughts to let go of.
They are, and we can do what I'm now calling a little detox in any moment where you just breathe in fresh, clean energy and breathe out what no longer serves you, and that would be those thoughts. So it's, what was it when they do CPR classes, you know, in with the good, out with the bad? I don't like to label things bad anymore. They're just not positive. So you just breathe in clean thoughts, clean energy, and breathe out the energy from whatever you've been telling yourself that doesn't serve you.
Beautiful. Now, your third section is a very important one, interacting with higher consciousness. And you start out with what you call the Bless Me method. And I have to admit, I had a little trouble understanding just how that worked when I read through it.
Well, happily, there is a video on my website in the gifts page and also online, 7 steps to connecting with higher consciousness, so that people can actually go through the process. Because it is a process where, bless me, are 7 specific steps to take you from normal waking consciousness to the optimal state of awareness for connecting with higher consciousness. So if it's hard to read something, you can then watch the video and you'll see how simple the practice actually is.
So we'll put a link to that video in the description of this video. Another exercise you have is called a sip of the divine.
It's my favorite practice to start people out with. It's another acronym, stands for Sit in Peace. And it's a great acronym because it only takes a few minutes to create a drink every morning and have a sip of that. We all have that routine. And I say, if you can take 5 minutes to sip your favorite drink, to create it every morning, could you take 3 minutes to have a sip of the divine, to experience your true nature, ask a question, get an answer, and realize you're connected with all that is? It's a meditative practice, and people can no longer make an excuse, well, I don't have time to meditate. You do the sip of the divine as described in the book, and you may just get hooked.
It's very interesting that you use that metaphor of a sip. It reminds me of some other spiritual traditions. They use the metaphor of nectar, divine nectar, and which is, I think, another way of expressing the idea of total bliss, that we sip this nectar of the divine and experience bliss. And I think that's the direction you're pointing here.
Definitely. That's the ultimate goal, to come to know who am I through this simple 3-minute practice. But what's really special about it is training in the ideal meditative practice of noticing your thoughts, noticing how the mind works, because one of the tasks in the sip of the divine is to sit quietly, ask a question, and watch, observe what arises in awareness. And anything that's not the answer to your question, you don't resist it. You simply notice it and let it flow through. And you start to notice how routine and habitual your thoughts are, how not helpful many of them are, how unnecessary many of them are. But you don't judge them. You, from that observer state, you say, oh, isn't that interesting how my mind is like that monkey chatter? But as you learn to let it go, then you start saying, well, how is it that I can actually observe these thoughts? Could there be two aspects of me, the experiencer and the witness?
And one of the other exercises in this category, inspired writing, we discussed in our previous interview, but I think it's worth going over again. You made a point, I think, in writing that when you wrote this book, you could have, because of your vast experience, have done it from the intellect. You have the knowledge. You could have written it that way, but you decided instead to use the inspired writing technique.
That's right, and we can all learn to do this, and it's, again, making that shift to I'm not only human. Let me come from the heart as I ask to be inspired as the words come through for this book. And just yesterday, Jeffrey, somebody said to me, you know, there are certain parts of your book, I feel like they're channeled. And they definitely are. Because I go back and I say, wow, I couldn't have written that myself. Well, there is only one self. But I couldn't have written them while in Suzanne Giesman mode. It's just tapping into this collective and saying, may the greatest good flow through me. And that's what this exercise helps all of us to learn to do. So imagine how helpful if we wrote everything from that state. But it's also extremely helpful for getting guidance and connecting with loved ones who have passed. You can use that practice to maintain that focus.
Suzanne, you said something a moment ago that I think deserves repeating. You said there is only one self, so that to do inspired writing, what you do is you let go of Susan Giesemann mode.
Yeah, exactly. And that wouldn't have made any sense to me a couple of decades ago. What do you mean there's more than the Suzanne Giesemann? And it's coming to know that we're connected to one mind. There's the Suzanne's mind. That's this field of energy and information. But where's all this other stuff coming from? And if you've read part one, you know that stuff is sensations, thoughts, and feelings. Where's all this coming from? You mean it's not just me here? And then you learn to call all of it the bigger self with a capital S.
The next category that you write about is called working with your A team. This brings up the whole question of you've got oneself, but then there's a team.
Yeah, this is the duality of life, the whole paradox. It's that we are both human and spirit, not either or. So we are one little self, and all of us make up the big self. So the book helps you get into that dancing mode where you flow around the dance floor as an individual, but as part of a team. And so when we come to know that there is a team above, that's what the A stands for, and a team below, it's all said jokingly, but kind of accurate when you're speaking energetically. They're not physically up here. It's a higher frequency. Then you can learn to call on this A team. And oh my gosh, that's when you better buckle your seatbelt.
Now, I know some spiritual writers describe what they call the group soul, or even many levels of a group soul, that we are not only connected to the one mind, but there are intermediate levels. And I imagine that that's where the guides and helpers come in.
That's correct. And let's just throw out there, then wouldn't there be just one soul that differentiates itself into group souls that differentiate themselves into smaller groups? To me, I see it like nested Russian dolls. And so, there's definitely different levels of being. And those who I've talked to in the higher levels say that they don't want us to think in terms of rank and hierarchy, although that is how it works. With my military background, you know, you start to think, well, then they deserve more respect and we need to honor them. And the higher beings I've talked to don't want that. They say it's more a matter of greater capacity to love each other, which we can achieve here, and the greater ability to help more people the higher the beings go. So why wouldn't we call on those with the bigger picture, with the greater feeling of love that they can share with us and help us raise our vibration? That's what connecting with your A team is all about.
One of the exercises in this category then is discerning yes and no answers.
Super helpful. Many people would go to a psychic to say, I don't know what to do. Should I get this new job? Should I end my relationship? You know, do I sell my house? Well, what if you knew that these answers are accessible from your own A team? And again, the higher we go, we can all access the same higher beings, call them guides, angels, archangels. I've had evidence that they exist, so I just trust. So just open your mind and say, I might be able to get answers, or how about just from my own higher self, from the aspects of my soul that I'm not aware of while I'm focused on my physical body? Well, your physical body will give you yes and no answers, and you can learn to attune to how your body reacts when an answer is no. It clenches up, it tightens. When the answer is yes, there's an openness. But I will tell you that our own fear can give us a false answer. So we learn first the practice of relaxing, opening, getting balanced and centered so that we can then ask the question that's on our mind and feel the answer.
Especially for anybody who's just starting out in this realm, that if they begin to connect with a member of the A team, they're going to have doubts, like, is this just a fantasy? Am I fooling myself?
Of course, that's very natural. And so if something is not harmful and you get some advice and you act on what you're sensing, the yes or no, and it turns out to have been a good choice, then you start to learn to trust it and you keep acting on it and you find out it's not your imagination.
And then another very important exercise, which we did discuss, as I recall, in our previous interview, is asking for evidence.
Oh, to me, that is so important because with my military background, I didn't want to be duped. I didn't want to look foolish. That's just very human that we can learn to set that aside as well. But still, the mind can make things up, meaning that the story you're telling yourself comes from just within your own energetic pattern of thoughts. So what we're really going for is something that's helpful coming from outside our normal field of interactions. So we can ask the A team to give us a sign. What sign are you going to give me that what you just told me is coming from you or is something that would be in my best interest to do? And then an image will pop into your mind or you'll hear something and you say, okay, I'll be aware of that. I'll look for that. And it comes up in your life. That's one way, the sign game. I think I say that as a separate exercise later. But you can just, for example, say, all right, oh, I remember the first time Archangel Michael appeared to me. I didn't want to believe that was real. I was actually put out and thought, I'm making this up. But what evidence can you give me? There's a video online called Archangel Michael is Real. The evidence from that encounter, Jeffrey, left no doubt in my mind that the archangelic realm is real. And I would not have that certainty. I would not have put that video online if the evidence hadn't made it clear that that was what we would call a very real encounter. So those in the A team, never mind when we put them to the test. So ask for evidence. Who are you? Tell me something I don't know about you is a great way of asking for evidence.
We will also link to that video in the description of this video. And then there's a fascinating exercise still in this category of working with the A team that I hope you can elaborate. Once again, I felt a little confused reading the description. It's called Noticing Snags and Pulling the Thread.
Oh, I'm surprised that you were confused by that, but if you were to look around the room right now, you, Jeffrey, and anybody watching this, note with the intention that something you're supposed to notice, but you don't know what it is, will just suddenly stop your normal gazing. There's a little feeling of a catch. That's what I call a snag. Like my attention just fell on a little bonsai plant that I have around the room. So once you get used to what a snag feels like, and you set the intention that your A team can get your attention by snagging you with something, then what you do is you pull the thread. When you have a snag on a shirt or a sweater, you don't want to pull that thread, but it catches your attention because it stands out. But in this case, pulling the thread means, okay, A team, I told you when you have a message for me to snag me, you just snag me with that bonsai plant or whatever it was. Why? And now you listen from the heart. And right now I'm just being reminded of a conversation I had with dinner guests last night who told me a place where I can buy Japanese pottery, which I love. And the bonsai plant is Japanese. And they're saying, this is a reminder that you can go there later this afternoon and look for that. So it's just an interactive way of realizing you have a team that knows what's going on and they catch your attention. I could tell a better story if you don't mind me taking a moment for that.
No, please.
Okay. Because I have let my guides know this is a great way of communicating. Snag me whenever there's a message. I was out on a bike ride with my husband one day on a beautiful trail, but along a highway. And just riding along, I felt that catch with a billboard along the highway. And I immediately pulled the thread by saying, why did that billboard snag me just now? I've passed lots of billboards. And they put in my awareness a reading I did for a gentleman months and months earlier who was in the billboard business. And now that I've pulled the thread and opened up to guidance, I heard his father is here. He wants his son to know that he knows they had the baby. In the reading I did for this gentleman who had the billboard business, his father in spirit had told me, I know his wife is pregnant with their first child. He doesn't have to worry that I'm not here to see the birth. Well, I yelled to my husband, hi, Ty, stop. I just got snagged by a billboard. I need to call a former client of mine. I called him up and I said, your dad is here and he knows you had the baby and it's a boy and he knows you named him after him. All true, Jeffrey. Now, see, I was focused on my own life, on a bicycle ride, but Spirit said, there's a man here that wants his son to know he knows all about this baby. So they snagged me. It's a beautiful method of getting our attention when we're always busy and distracted in our human stories.
It seems to imply that no thought that might pass through your mind is really trivial, that you are honoring each and every little thought that goes through your awareness.
I love that you notice that. And that's, we could say, oh, all the monkey mind thoughts are trivial. And yet, so many ordinary thoughts are actually put in our mind. Like I had the thought, oh, go get your nails done sometime back. Huh, might as well. But I thought it was my thought. And I sit down in the nail salon. A woman walks in right after me, sits down. It turns out that she had a son who passed. She didn't know I was in town giving a workshop about how to connect with her son. And she came to the class, and it was just a beautiful experience for her and exactly what she needed. So my ordinary thought, oh, maybe I'll go get my nails done today, which I thought was mine, I can now see was a setup from Spirit because they knew she was going to that salon.
How do you distinguish between time that you have for yourself and time that you devote to the guides in the A-Team?
For the A-Team, there is no time. They appreciate our lives and what we have to do. And we always have free will. So it's just every moment. This book is about being consciously connected, divinely guided, moment by moment. So you tune in and you feel, is this something that I'm meant to do? Can I go for a bike right now? Should I be working on that project? It makes life into this beautiful dance, as I mentioned earlier, a flow instead of, I used to have my to-do list, my little card with everything I've got to get done all day and go down the list. And now I have a general idea of what I'm going to get done, but I know that there are guides, my A-Team, that has the bigger picture. And I literally let myself be guided moment by moment.
Well, I imagine that's a very rare thing. Most people probably don't even have a concept of letting yourself be guided moment by moment every day.
That's what the book's about. That's why you do this, because, you know, from that left brain, my job as an aide to the highest officer in the United States military, you talk about having to be on the ball and do things in a very structured way. This is a radical shift for me. But the difference is freedom and balance. And if we can get more people to live that way, then we'll be more peaceful with each other. That's the goal.
I think your fifth section or fifth category naturally follows from what we've been discussing, which is practicing presence moment by moment.
I love that it includes the word practicing because it is a practice. We went away for the weekend and I, in a different environment, I was so focused on our human life that I was not as aware of my guides, my A-Team as normal. And I was aware of not being aware. So because I have practiced presence for so long, I caught myself and just checked in with the A-Team every so often. So this is a muscle we have to work, this practicing presence. And it comes with the practices that are in the book.
I find as an interviewer that being in the moment is essential for what I'm doing here when I'm with you or anybody being interviewed. It's all about presence.
It is. And I'm curious, Jeffrey, if you find that tiring. If at the end of an interview, are you a little more tired than normal from holding that focus?
That is true, particularly back in the day when I was in a TV studio with hot lights on me the whole time. I would notice after an interview that the guests and the crew would be chatting and very active, and I was just ready to take a nap.
Yes, because when you're interviewing someone and when you're being interviewed, we have set the intention of being completely focused on this moment, on each other. And I'm also focused on what words are coming through me, and I know they're being guided by my team, so I'm connected to my A team as I do interviews, and I find afterwards I'm just tired because it's an intense presence. So we can't maintain that kind of intense presence throughout the day, but the more you practice presence, then as spirit is snagging you and getting your attention, and you're more aware that you're not only this story, it becomes a regular way of being, and it's not tiring.
And you suggest that we can provide for ourselves reminders throughout the day.
Oh my gosh, I have reminders all around me. This ring that I wear on this finger is a reminder. A friend gave it to me. It's a Native American story ring. And if you can see, the middle part of the ring doesn't move, and yet the inside is a little story in figures, and it moves around the stationary part. So this reminds me, this is like us. When I look at it, it's a constant reminder. There's a part of me that never changes, and yet the story is constantly evolving. We are both. So right there on my hand, I'm wearing a reminder, and there are many practices in this category for how to get reminders around you. This room is full of them. Yeah, it's a wonderful way to remember to make the shift.
That's really beautiful. And I have to say, I have decorated my own house much in a similar way. Almost anywhere my eye goes, I will find a reminder.
Good. And as I say in the book, I especially recommend one right on your sink where you brush your teeth. So first thing in the morning, I have a little cherub statue. That reminds me, I have an A team, and I acknowledge them first thing in the morning because it's so easy to just get into our routine, get into human role. I got to go do this. I got to get to work and forget. Here they are. They're ready to make things easier for us. So a little reminder as you're brushing your teeth and maybe at the end of the day might be nice to say thank you, that kind of thing.
And one of the other exercises you have here is called the Human Soul Dial.
I love this one. It's a metaphor for the fact that we are both human and a soul. And if you picture an old time, or maybe some are still like this, a fuel gauge on a car that was an arc, and empties over here, and the arrow goes to full. Well, we put H over here for human and S over here for soul. And it's impossible for us to remain in soul awareness all the time. And very often when something upsetting happens, boom, we go over to fully human mode over here. And the goal is to stay somewhat balanced in our awareness between being a human and a soul. And when you catch yourself with presence of saying something nasty to someone or about yourself, you just acknowledge, oops, the dial went a little too high to human. That doesn't feel good. So let's dial up the soul awareness and be kind and compassionate. And now we're back in balance. It's just a metaphor and a visual for noticing where we are in our expression of the self. Big S.
That's beautiful. I really like that one. And the next one has a wonderful story to it that I hope you will tell. Silence on the Bridge.
Yes. That comes from my husband is a retired Navy captain. I never served at sea, but we're into boats and we both have our captain's license. And we recently bought a new boat and went out with the previous owner so he could show us how it operates. And I was taking the first watch, and we're going through a tricky section, and this gentleman started yakking away, telling us a story. And my husband shocked both of us by going into Navy mode, and he snapped, "Silence on the bridge." And both of us just suddenly just became very quiet. It was so funny. But that's what they say in the Navy when you need to pay attention. Well, the next time I was driving the boat into our home port in a very narrow lock, I noticed that I was very nervous, and my human mind was going crazy. Like, what if I don't steer right? What if I hit the wall of the lock? And all of a sudden, my guide said to me, put the tongue on the roof of your mouth, flatten it upward, just put it there. I did that, Jeffrey, And all the negative chatter stopped. It was stunning. And suddenly, without the negative what-if thoughts, all the fear was gone, and I just intuitively took the boat right through the lock. Well, the guides explained that what we do when we flatten the tongue on the roof of the mouth is connect the feminine and masculine energy, becoming whole, and the flow can continue. So there's balance. And I tried this multiple times, not only when docking the boat, but I shared it with a friend while we were driving down the highway. And she tried it while passing a big 18-wheel truck in the left lane. She said, that always makes me nervous. But she just flattened her tongue on the roof of the mouth. There was no negative self-talk. And she wasn't afraid. Just the simple little physiological move we can make. And I call it silence on the bridge because it silences the voice that isn't helpful.
It seems like a secret yoga posture.
Yeah, the secret's out.
So your final section of the six sections of the Awakened Way is turning emotional scars into glowworms.
Yes, a dear friend, Brenda Baker, who is now in the spirit world and helping me with my readings as a medium, told me when she came back in her first visit, one of her first visits, within the first couple of days of passing, she said, Suzanne, everybody is walking wounded. You can see the scars and the aura from here. And that's a metaphor because the aura is an energetic field. It can't really be ripped or torn. We use these as visuals. But she said that you can see the wounds energetically, but the ones you work on, they look like little glow worms. What a beautiful analogy for the fact that this light is within all of us, this, the light of consciousness, the soul. And that when we let our light shine by being willing to look at our wounds and heal them, they become these shining portals for the energy to go outward.
How does that healing process take place if we have a wound?
Oh, the healing, there are multiple practices we can take to look at the energy that we have been afraid to look at. So it's all a matter of no longer stuffing down energy. The pot that has a lid on it that's simmering will eventually boil over. And we see that when we react, when something triggers us. So I have multiple practices in this section that help us safely and lovingly let the steam out.
One of those practices I know is called forgiveness in an instant.
Oh my gosh. I've learned this from doing readings for thousands of people that when they realize that their loved ones with whom they're holding grudges acted out of ignorance, that we're all souls, they can find forgiveness just like that. I had a woman who carried anger at her mother for 75 years. And in the reading, the mother explained why she had done this thing that caused the anger. And the woman just dropped it. She said, I've carried this for years and it's gone in an instant. And that's what showed me that when we take the soul's perspective and understand that humans do human things out of ignorance, that we are souls, that hurt people, all it takes is that shift in perspective and the forgiveness naturally occurs. It's life-changing.
Well, I can imagine that that's the case with regard to events in the past. If I'm holding a grudge about something that occurred last month or so, I can come to a place of forgiveness. But what if the problem is ongoing?
Okay, so I'm asking my guides that question. Oh, no, guys, just remind me of a phrase that they have me say to myself when I make mistakes here and now. Forgive me for ever thinking I was anything less than love. And so that's why we make mistakes. All relationships are opportunities to turn up our own light. So we never accept abuse from anyone. So we say, forgive them forever thinking they were anything less than love. And now we ask spirit, what is my best action to take here? Do I remain in a relationship that's harmful that's hurtful. Feel into that yes, no answer. What action is in the best interest of everyone concerned? It's just an ongoing flow and dance with what's happening now, but bringing the soul's perspective in will really change that.
What you've just said reminds me of a story told to me recently by another guest, a man who practices what you could think of as spirit depossession, when people seem to be possessed by a harmful or an unhelpful spirit, an external entity in their consciousness that seems to be malicious. And he encountered this in one of his therapy clients, and he was very afraid that, you know, this is not going to turn out well. And she left and saw a psychic, and the psychic immediately diagnosed what the situation was and told her, says, what you need to tell this entity that is pestering you, I have nothing for you but love.
You're talking about your interview with Bob Falconer, and after when we met for when I interviewed you sometime past, you had just interviewed him. So I've read some of his books, and I will tell you, Jeffrey, that in the middle of the night about 3 weeks ago, this was not a dream. I was awake, so it was more of a meditative experience. Suddenly, I sensed what I can only call demonic beings, and I don't even believe in them, coming at me looking like gargoyles. It was totally a very real experience, but not a dream. And they had their hands around my throat. And because of what I learned from you and Bob Falconer, I just said, I love you all. I don't know what you're up to. And I mean, it was terrifying. I said, but I have nothing but love for you. I know I cannot die, so you cannot harm me. And I'm not afraid of you. I love you. And it was like in the Wizard of Oz, where the witch just dissolves into nothing. They just became just this, and it's all energy, stuff, sensations, thoughts, and feelings. And then I transmuted that with a little ceremony, a visualization of beautiful light. And I asked my guides, what was that all about? And they said, well, now you'll be able to teach it. No.
What a wonderful story.
I mean, to literally, I felt fear, but I was so solid in the knowing that we are love and that love heals everything and we cannot die. Just apply that to dreams, meditations, and people here. Now, people here can hurt us and can kill the body. I'm not naive. But love will really heal situations.
The final exercise that you refer to in your final section is rewriting your past energetically.
Yes, it's absolutely possible in a meditative state to go back and visit a time when you might have acted differently. If you had known then what you know now, well, how would you have reacted? I know now that I cannot die, that I am loved. So I've gone back to interactions I had with my mother that were painful. I can't change how she reacted, but I can change my responses. And so I have that experience in meditation. I ask my guides to help me with it. And now I don't bring that pain into the future when I come back out of meditation. That's just one example. But we are energetic beings, not set in stone. Our field is constantly fluctuating, so we can go back and turn that scar into that glowworm.
I seem to be doing this several times every day, that my mind remembers an embarrassing moment, a moment when I acted inappropriately, or when maybe I inadvertently hurt somebody, and no matter how long ago it was, no matter whether the person is alive or dead, I send healing to that moment. And it seems, it feels like something very positive that I'm doing.
It definitely makes a difference, and we're not denying reality, we're accepting it. It changes the present moment without a doubt. Beautiful.
Suzanne, these are such wonderful practices, and I being with you makes me realize that when you incorporate these practices in a regular basis, it changes your life radically, as it has done for you.
I'm glad to be a model of that, Jeffrey. that we've just touched on a few of them. I think there are 25 practices in the books, and I've tried to make them very practical so that we can do them moment by moment, like you said. So thank you for the opportunity to give people a little taste of what's possible for all of us.
Well, I'm so thrilled to be able to share these exercises with the New Thinking Aloud audience. I want to remind our viewers and listeners that there are links to your website and to your videos that go into more detail about some of the exercises. And once again, Suzanne, let me thank you from the bottom of my heart for being with me today and with the viewers and listeners of New Thinking Aloud.
It's an honor. Thank you for all that you do to help people know these truths.
And for those of you watching or listening, thank you for being with us, because you are the reason that we are here. Two in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ, celebrating his 90th birthday. You can now download a PDF copy or order a beautiful printed copy of issue 6 of the New Thinking Aloud magazine.